This episode is brought to you by Charles Schwab. Decisions made in Washington can affect your portfolio every day. Washington Wise from Charles Schwab is an original podcast that unpacks the stories making news there. Listen at schwab.com/WashingtonWise.
Hurricane Idalia threatens Florida with catastrophic damage just hours ahead of its expected landfall. Plus a violent night as Ukraine and Russia trade long-distance strikes, and U.S. Ambassador to Japan Rahm Emanuel takes aim at China's leadership.
I'd like to have a great relationship, but if they're going to keep lying and cheating as a modus operandi of the state and its legitimacy, then you would be a fool to go into that discussion negotiation not cognizant of what they're doing.
It's Wednesday, August 30th. I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal, and here is the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Hurricane Idalia is expected to make landfall on Florida's Gulf Coast early this morning as a Category 4 storm. In a 5 a.m. update, the National Hurricane Center said that Idalia was generating maximum sustained winds of 130 miles an hour and warned of potential storm surge as high as 16 feet in some areas. With many of Florida's counties under some kind of evacuation order, FEMA Administrator Deanne Criswell told all of the state's residents to be vigilant and heed warnings from officials.
This storm surge, this is one of the highest risk parts of a hurricane and is especially problematic along the west coast of Florida due to the underwater geography. Very few people can survive being in the path of major storm surge, and this storm will be deadly if we don't get out of harm's way and take it seriously.
Idalia is expected to weaken following landfall, but will remain a hurricane as it moves up the Big Bend coast to southern Georgia and South Carolina later today. Ukraine has launched its largest drone attack against military targets in Russia since the start of the war. The overnight attacks succeeded in disabling four military transport planes in a region some 400 miles away from Ukraine. The Russian officials reported that drones were also launched to five other regions, including the capital Moscow. The night also saw Russia unleash its most sustained missile barrage against Kyiv in months, resulting in two deaths, according to the city's military administration. While Ukraine lacks Russia's long-range missiles, it has deployed an increasingly efficient force of domestically engineered strike drones, which military analysts say have been used to disable more Russian planes at their home bases in Russia than in combat. Military officials say they have seized power in the African nation of Gabon. The coup came shortly after the state election body announced that President Ali Bongo had won a national election, extending his family's 55-year hold on power. The seizure of power follows a coup in Niger by rebel soldiers last month, and is the latest in a series of coups challenging the governments of former French colonies and Western military allies on the continent. And we are exclusively reporting that Saudi Arabia is poised to take a major step toward establishing diplomatic relations with Israel by offering to resume financial aid to the Palestinian Authority. That is according to Saudi officials and former Palestinian officials familiar with the discussions, which could continue next week when the PA sends a delegation to the kingdom. The Journal's Dion Nissenbaum has more.
The Palestinians accused the United Arab Emirates of stabbing them in the back when they normalized with Israel in 2020, and Saudi Arabia doesn't want to have the same situation if they normalize with Israel in the coming year or two. And so they are trying to entice the Palestinians to work with them by offering to resume hundreds of millions of dollars in financial aid directly to the Palestinian Authority. And for the Palestinians, this is also extremely important because they effectively got nothing out of the normalization deals with the UAE and Bahrain in 2020. And if they don't get some cooperation from Saudi Arabia, their hopes of building a Palestinian state could effectively be crushed.
Coming up, in the face of common threats from China and North Korea, leaders from the U.S., South Korea, and Japan are committing to forge a sturdier three-way alliance. But what exactly would that alliance do? And can it endure? U.S. Ambassador to Japan Rahm Emanuel weighs in after the break.
Rapid expansion?
We're ready.
Worker shortage?
We're good.
Anything can change the world of work.
A celebrity buys the company.
Depends on who it is. But relax, we've got ADP.
From HR to payroll, ADP designs forward-thinking solutions to take on the next anything.
Earlier this month, President Biden met with the leaders of Japan and South Korea to unveil a new trilateral alliance linking the countries together to counter rising threats from North Korea and China. The White House hopes the partnership alters the strategic landscape against Beijing. And earlier today, I sat down with a U.S. diplomat who has a front row seat to how the tides are changing in the region, Ambassador to Japan, Rahm Emanuel.
Ambassador Emanuel, welcome to What's News. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
This region potentially doesn't have a lot of time before some relatively scary scenarios could emerge on the security front. Xi Jinping has told his military to be ready for an invasion of Taiwan potentially by 2027. Is that a date that occupies space in your mind?
I mean, you're cognizant of it without it becoming myopic about it. And I also think the most important thing to do is our level of deterrence, and when I say ours, Japan, South Korea, Australia, all of those countries who share a basic set of principles and ideals together and are willing to sacrifice for them. Like what happened the other day at Camp David with Korea, Japan, and the United States is part of that deterrence. What happened, you know, 18 months earlier with the announcement of AUKUS is part of that. Taiwan is one issue, but I think before you even think about Taiwan, I would think about what's happening in the South China Sea and what's happening with the Philippines. There's a number of things given China's behavior. In the last 6 months, China has had two land conflicts with India, many kind of conflicts with the Philippines. You've had constant incursion on Taiwan, air and water space. You've had multiple incursions into Japanese air and water space. You've had tracking of the United States planes, also Australia and Canada. So you could pick which country you think is the trigger. And that's what's actually the most prevalent fact in the Indo-Pacific, is that China is, whether it's on military terms, political terms, or on strategic terms, in economic terms, is not a good neighbor.
You mentioned willingness to sacrifice for shared endeavors.
Yeah.
If we do get to that worst-case scenario, a Chinese invasion of Taiwan, will Japan fight alongside the U.S.?
That's a question for the Japanese, not for the U.S. ambassador. But I do think what's significant is, before there was a tank on the Ukrainian border by Russia, Prime Minister Kishida called for dramatically increasing and doubling Japan's defense budget to go from the ninth largest in the world to the third, and to acquire certain skills and capabilities that they never thought of. That was before the world, quote-unquote, changed. Japan is also getting capabilities that are very relevant to its security and to being a full partner in making sure that the Indo-Pacific remains free and open. They have put deterrence and put a capital D behind it. And it's welcomed by the United States. I really think you got to look back at what happened in Camp David. You know, we have, the United States, a complicated history with Japan and Korea. Japan and Korea have a complicated history with Japan and Korea. Korea and Japan have a complicated history with the United States. And what happened at Camp David, when you look at it in contrast to what's going on in Ukraine, President Biden, President Yoon, and Prime Minister Kishida decided to make something of the 21st century peacefully. I think that's a pretty broad, big statement.
And you think that's a future-proof alliance that's being built now?
I do think the strategic plates shifted on August 19th. And I know that because of the way China's rhetoric of containment got hot. I also think it's an example, as I said earlier, about putting the past and seizing the future. That's what leadership's about. it has the potential, if we do as much hard work today in putting the roots down of those principles that were on the communique on the page, then we're going to have an alliance among three countries that will stand the test of time.
Economic ties between the U.S. and China are slipping now. You have been outspoken in your criticism of the Communist Party at a time when, you know, cabinet officials have been trying to put a floor under relations.
I'm for that. I'm for not only a floor, I'm for a dialogue. But I'm also not for being, as my father would say, a schmuck. And he said it with this term of endearment. I mean, what I mean by this is Xi stood in the Rose Garden and said, we will never militarize the South China Sea. The wheels of his plane were not up in the belly of the plane when they were doing exactly that. They're part of the World Trade Organization, international economic structure. I can't tell you how many times I had a CEO in my office when I was chief of staff, when I was a congressman, and would say that they're stealing intellectual property, they're stealing product, they're making us give it to them for free so they could basically underwrite and then also undermine your product and do nothing but replicate it. Not even a bolt or a screw was different. So at some point, you got to say, look, now you can sit there and say, well, we'd like to have a great relationship. But if they're going to keep the Communist Party, and specifically under Xi, use lying and cheating as a modus operandi of the state and its legitimacy, then you would be a fool to go into that discussion negotiation not cognizant of what they're doing. And my view is, keep doing what you're doing. You're the one with 30% unemployment among youth, not us. You got 10 years of housing with nobody in it. You got people that are getting fleeced by the big developers and the banks. You got municipalities in China that make Chicago look like a AAA rated bond. Keep at it. There is nothing the United States is doing to you that measures what you've done to yourself. We didn't do any of that. And so my point is, I'm ready to have a conversation. I'm also ready not to get in the way of you to doing to yourself what we could never only hope on our best day could get done to you. And if you want to stay doing it and you want to walk away from the international system that you benefited from, well, there, for the grace of God, go ahead. Why should I get in the way of that?
Ambassador Emmanuel, thank you very much for your time.
Yeah, thank you.
For a quick debrief on what we've just heard there, I'm joined by Journal Tokyo Bureau Chief Peter Landers. Peter, you sat in on this interview earlier today. What jumped out to you?
I was surprised at how forcefully the ambassador took on China and personally accused Chinese leader Xi Jinping of mismanaging the economy, took issue with his positions on South China Sea and intellectual property. And certainly China would take issue with what the ambassador said. China would say that its construction activities in the South China Sea, including military facilities, those are legitimate within its sovereign rights of self-defense. And in fact, China says it's the U.S. that is responsible for militarizing the area by sending warships and military aircraft into what China would say is its territorial waters and airspace. And we also heard Ambassador Emmanuel talk about stealing intellectual property, as he alleged. But China says that's not the case, that they are working to improve legal protections for intellectual property rights and defend the international intellectual property system. So they would say their economic growth is part of their own efforts and reject what the ambassador is saying, that Xi Jinping is responsible for China's problems.
And Peter, on the ambassador's remarks about the youth unemployment situation in China, you almost got the sense that he was seeing what was happening there as being somewhat beneficial to the U.S. in terms of proving a point. Was that notable to you, given that, for instance, today, Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo was wrapping up her visit to China and had said earlier in the week that it would be in the interests of both the U.S. and China, and she said to the world, really, for these countries to have a stable economic relationship given their $700 billion in trade? What do you make of that?
It did seem as if he saw some benefit for the United States in China having economic problems, and he even exaggerated how bad the youth unemployment situation is in China. He said the rate is 30%. The most recent figure we have is actually 21%, although China stopped reporting it in July, so it could have risen since then. But just in that exaggeration and the general tone of his remarks, he did seem to be suggesting that it was not a problem at all for the United States if China is in trouble. And that's different from what we would hear from Secretary Raimondo in Beijing, where she is pointing to the benefits for the world of more trade between China and the U.S.
That was Wall Street Journal Tokyo Bureau Chief Peter Landers. Peter, thanks.
Thank you.
And that's What's News for Wednesday morning. Today's show was produced by Mohsen Ali. Our supervising producer is Sandra Kilhoff. And I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal. We will be back tonight with a new show. And until then, thanks for listening.
This episode is brought to you by Vanta. Vanta's trust management platform helps you quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more. Learn how by watching Vanta's on-demand demo at vanta.com/WSJ.